oftentimes when we talk about other people, especially when we're trying to be in polite society, we don't want to make offenses, we don't want to get somebody riled up, so oftentimes we don't talk about other people's religions. To the point where sometimes we get to the point where we don't talk about other people's religion, we don't understand anybody else's religions. And every once in a while I run across people that will say, well, yeah, I go to this church, but I kind of, you know, I don't see why we can't go someplace else, or, you know, and one of them that comes up sometimes, well, the Mormons are nice people. And so they'll go there and they think, well, that's, you know, this is just another brand of Christianity, another religion. And what ends up happening is very much the charge that Jesus, or not Jesus, God made, God the Father made in Hebrew, Hosea chapter 4. Hosea chapter 4. And in verse 6. So my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I have also rejected you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will forget your children. Here he was talking about the fact that they did not even know their own law. But we also need to be people that understand and know about what the religious climate is around us. We need to know what other people are teaching and why it's wrong. We need to be able to communicate that to other people as well as to ourselves and to our own children. How do we deal with the idea that one church is as good as another, which is touted quite a bit, if we don't know why there are different churches? So instead of being willfully ignorant, we're going to examine, starting today, and hopefully I'm going to finish tonight, we'll see how it goes, we're going to examine the beliefs of the Church of Christ of the Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormons, because their book that they have, they title it as the Book of Mormons. And so that's why they get called sometimes Mormons. Most of the information I'm going to present come from Mormon sympathizers or Mormons' own documents. These are things that they will tell you about themselves if they know about it. These are things that they have recorded about themselves. So I'm not, you know, going to documents of people that really don't like Mormons and trying to show you things. I'm showing you things they say about themselves. Unlike most denominations, the Church of Christ of the Latter-day Saints have a supplement to the Bible. They don't just follow what we find in the Old Testament and the New Testament. In fact, in their teachings, the Old Testament and the New Testament have been corrupted or mistranslated. Joseph Smith claimed that on September 21st, 1823, the angel Moroni told him that some golden plates were buried in Camorra, New York. That's a hill in his neighborhood. I've been to the hill. I've even climbed it. So I know where it's at. The plates supposedly told of the contact of Native American tribes under fictitious names with Jesus Christ. See, they used to say that they were actually Native American tribes. They had to change that because there's, of course, no records of Native American tribes by those names, so they said, well, they just put them under fictitious names to protect the innocent or something. And that's why you always see this symbol on the front. Is that's supposed to be the angel Moroni. That's why they have it on top of their places of worship and on their books and things like that. Further, Smith claimed that the plates were written in Reformed Egyptian. And we don't have to worry about the fact of what kind of language is Reformed Egyptian, because supposedly Smith claimed to have miraculous gift of the ability to then translate that language into English. So we don't even have to worry about the fact that it's Reformed Egyptian. Nobody's supposedly seen it. But that's all right. Smith then translated for us, and then we have what he called the Book of Mormon. Now, several people have claimed to have seen the plates, but as we talked about the last time, and we went through this, what's really surprising is almost all the witnesses fell away from Mormonism. A couple just temporarily, but the vast majority of them fell away. And when you start scratching off all the ones that fell away, all you're left with is Smith's father and his brother. You start scratching off all the people that fell away from the witnesses, and all you have is Smith's family left. It isn't often that mentioned in history, but what we find in history is that Joseph Smith had a history of being a charlatan. He liked to claim that he had a peepstone or magic talismans that allowed him to find buried treasure. He did this before the Book of Mormon came out. In fact, in 1826, he was tried in court in those days. I remember the Book of Mormon came out was supposedly found in 1823. It didn't get published until 1830. So we're talking about basically 4 years before the Book of Mormon was published. He was tried in court because in those days, claiming to have magical abilities and practicing magical things was against the law. And he was found guilty. He was charged by the court. But he wasn't sentenced because, one, he was a young man. He was only 16 at the time. So he managed to get off for that reason. But the other reason that was mentioned, the reason why he got off, is he agreed to leave the area. So that's why there wasn't charges pressed against him. One of those men that was marked as a witness, one view that actually stuck around was Martin Harris. He tells us, "I was picking my teeth with a pin while sitting on the bars. The pin caught in my teeth and dropped from my fingers onto the shavings and straw. We could not find it. I then took Joseph on surprise and said to him, I said, take your stone. He took it and placed it in his hat, that old white hat, and placed his face in his hat. I watched him closely to see that he did not look to one side. He reached out his hand behind me, on the right, and moved a little stick, and there I saw the pin, which he had picked up and gave to me. I know he did not look out of that hat until after he picked up this pin." This is the type of tricks that he would like to do. And if most of us will look at it and say, yeah, magic trick. Make it look mysterious. But this is the type of person that Joseph Smith was. Harris also tells us that Joseph used the seer stone to find gold plates. In this stone, he could see many things to my certain knowledge. It was by means of this stone he discovered these plates. And he never gave it up. He did this through most of his life. In fact, when he died, this thing, there is a thing called a Jupiter's talisman that he was carrying on his person. This is a photograph of what he had on his person. Front and back. Jupiter is supposed to be one of the Greek gods, and he carried a talisman that was supposed to let him see things. Now you're wondering, well, why do the, this is something that you can find in Mormon records. Why do the Mormons talk about this? Well, the Mormons talk about it because they say, well, if he can do these things, then that's a miraculous gift. There's nothing wrong with being able, if he can actually see with a seer stone, then that just shows that he has miraculous powers. There's nothing wrong with that. There's no fraud here because he could actually do it. Of course, the problem he was in court was because he couldn't find some treasure. Then the guy got upset about it. But they kind of gloss over that little fact. So they had no theological difficulties with this. Now, the Book of Mormon itself was published in 1830, and it claims to be a further revelation of Jesus Christ. And if you read through the book, it intermixes biblical facts with unsupported claims. For example, it states that two people, Lehi and Nehi, dwelt in Jerusalem during the reign of Zedekiah. Zedekiah was a king in Jerusalem. But Lehi and Nehi, as far as we know, are imaginary characters. There was no mention of such a people in the scriptures or elsewhere. And if you ask these young Mormon, quote, elders that come walking around your doors and ask for what evidence they have that these books are legitimate, they'll urge you to pray fervently and God will convict you of its truth. Of course, this is not how God tells us to look at the evidence. God never asks his people just to pray and he will somehow show them to it. God tells his people to accept his word based on the evidence of what he said. Take a look at Isaiah 41. Isaiah 41. Starting with verse 21. Isaiah 41, verse 21. Present your case, says the Lord. Bring forth your strong arguments. The king of Jacob says, let them bring forth and declare to us what is going to take place. As for the former evidence, or former events, declare what they were, that we may consider them and know their outcome, and announce to us what is coming. Declare the things that are going to come afterward, that we may know that you are gods. Indeed, do good or evil, that we may anxiously look about us and fear together. Behold, you are no account, and your works amount to nothing. He who chooses you is an abomination. Here God lays out, here's how some things, how you can prove that you are actually God or from God. Tell us what's going to happen in the future. Notice all God also says, tell us what happened in the past. See, that's one of the things the Bible has been charged with a number of times, is that, oh, its accuracy and its recorded history is not right. Every single time somebody tries to make that charge, it eventually comes out that the Bible has been right. One of the more famous ones is the Bible talked about the Hittite nation. Oh, there have never been any Hittites. Well, we found them eventually. Yeah, there were Hittites. They had a large empire. It just kind of disappeared. We forgot about them. But here's where God's showing. Tell us about the past accurately. Tell us about the future accurately. Do good or bad so that we might tremble. Keep these things in mind as we look at the evidence when we talk about Mormonism. Because the Bible tells us in 1 John chapter 4, 1 John chapter 4, and in verse 1, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. There are a lot of false prophets in the world. Don't believe them until you test their spirits. See whether they are from God. And so to ask for evidence is not wrong. I have yet to find somebody from the Mormon religion who is willing to discuss evidence. They want to talk about faith, but they don't want to talk about facts. And that's because they understand deep down that their facts don't hold up. Now, the book does offer, as we talked about in the past, the book does offer the testimony of witnesses, but as we noted earlier, all these men left the Mormon faith before their deaths. In fact, I have a copy, it's not a photocopy, but I have a copy of the 1830 edition from Wikipedia. They actually, somebody managed to type one in. This is a copy of the 1830 edition of the Statement of the Witnesses. What I wanted you to note, what's highlighted here, is that if you look in a modern Book of Mormon, those highlighted words aren't there anymore. They're altered. The testimony that was made Some of it was because of spelling, like for instance, seen is spelled with three E's, and marvelous is spelled with two L's. Some of it is they changed the grammar, where they had shoon, they changed it to shown. They were trying to make it look old English. Some of it was grammar problems, who instead of a which, there instead of his. So they fixed some grammar mistakes, they fixed up spelling mistakes. One of them, though, is this testimony here that was signed by eight witnesses talks about Joseph Smith being the author and proprietor, the owner of the Book of Mormon. They changed that to just say translator. Now think about it. This particular phrase kind of disturbs me. If you're talking about testimony and somebody had signed their name on it, do you then afterwards change the wording of the testimony? And say, now this is what these people claimed was true. It's different. Author and proprietor versus translator is two different things. Yet the actual testimony is different. I want you to think about, though, in the Bible, the witness of the Bible, in John chapter 17, we mentioned this last week. We talked about what happened to the various witnesses of the Bible from history. But in John 17, verse 12, Jesus says, "While I was with them, I was keeping them in thy name, which thou hast given me, and I guarded them, and not one of them perished but the son of perdition, that the scriptures might be fulfilled." Other than the one that was prophesied to fall away, God kept every one of the witnesses. And they all died for their faith. None of them ever renounced their testimony. But this is the basic claim for the Book of Mormon, as far as the truth of it. Though the claim is that the Book of Mormon is from God, there have been thousands of changes since its publication. Now, to cover that, what the Mormons used to do was to buy old copies and destroy them. That's why it's kind of hard to get a hold of an 1830 copy of the Book of Mormon or some of the older editions, because they would literally buy them up and destroy them just to cover the fact that they were altering it. They kind of stopped doing that. But even the Book of Mormon has a statement in it. It says, "Now if there are faults, they are the mistake of men. Wherefore condemn not the things of God, that you may be found spotless at the judgment seat of Christ." The Book of Mormon says, "Well, if I made any mistakes in here, it's my fault. But don't blame God for it." Compare that to what Jesus says about the Old Testament in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 18. "For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass away from the law until all is accomplished." Not the smallest jot, which is just a little edge on the Jewish letter, not the smallest letter, which is a tittle, will pass away. What's God's attitude towards his word? Every little stroke is important compared to what the Book of Mormon claims, which is, well, if there's mistakes, they're men's faults, and don't look at it. Quite a bit different. Here, I'll show you one that's it's a very humorous example. This is from the Book of Alma. It's from, in the 1830 edition, it's Alma 15. It's on page 303. They redid the numbering system when they did the Book of Mormon from the time it first started. So this is the finding it there. says, "Yea, I know that he allotteth, and he allotteth is misspelled. Unto men, yea, decreeth unto them decrees which are unalterable according to their wills." That part that's highlighted in yellow. This is from the 1980 edition. Hopefully you can see it somewhat. That same part in there, I often know herald up my desires from the firm decree of a just God, for I know that he has granted unto men according to their desire, whether it be unto death or unto life. Yea, I know that he allotteth, they fix the spelling, unto men according to their wills, whether they be unto salvation or destruction. If you'll notice that the highlighted yellow part is not there. Which I think is hilarious, because this is the part that says, "He decreeth unto them decrees which are unalterable." The phrase that was said that they're unalterable has been altered. It's missing. That's the 1980. By the way, just by sheer coincidence, I have, this one is a 1980 version. When I read about that, I said, I got a Book of Mormon. Oh, this is a 1980 version. That's where it is photocopied from. I happened to also find out in the library one day, somebody was getting rid of some old books, and they just had it in the rack of saying, "This is free." This is a 1981 version. Just 1 year difference. I photocopied out of that. I have to know not to harrow up my desires, the firm decree of a just God, for I know that he granted unto men according to their desire, whether it be unto death or unto life. Yea, I know that he allotteth unto men, yea, decreeth unto them decrees which are unalterable. It came back. 1 year later. This is what makes Mormonism hard to discuss, because they're constantly changing their book. And somehow they don't seem to, it doesn't seem to bother them. Also notice that the English style has changed. If you look between the two, there's a lot more. This one says allotted, this one says allotted. They're modernizing the English. Not totally, but they're modernizing the English each time they do a new edition. They change some of the old English words a little bit more modern. By the way, the type of English that was written in a King James's kind of style, but that's not the type of English they were using in the 1800s. But they keep changing it. But this is supposedly something that came from God. Now, the Doctrines and Covenants, that's one reason why I picked up this particular book, is actually yet another book. They have the Book of Mormon, Doctrines and Covenants, and A Pearl of Great Price. So actually, they're three main books that they use in the Mormon religion. Doctrines and Covenants is basically a collection of prophecies made by Joseph Smith. And I found this one to be particularly interesting. I didn't notice it before. This is one of the ones Jerry Blount pointed out, and I thought it was very fascinating. This is in their Doctrines and Covenants, I think Numbers 56. Yeah. "Behold, I, the Lord, commandeth, and he will not obey, shall be cut off from my own, in my own due time, and after I have commanded, the commandment is broken. Wherefore, I, the Lord, command and revoke as it seems good to me." In their idea of God, God can make change his mind. I'll say one thing one day, and if I want to change my mind tomorrow, that's fine. Notice in this yellow, "I revoke the commandment which was given to my servants Thomas B. Marsh and Ezra Thayer." What's really funny is you go to the next verse, or next section, "Verily I say to my servant Ezra," poor Ezra Thayer, "must repent of his pride and his selfishness and obey the former commandments which I have given him." He revoked them. in verse 2. And in verse 3, he puts them back. Or actually, he revoked them, but poor Ezra has to still obey them. So he has to obey the revoked commandments. And then what really gets ironic, as you get down to the very bottom here, though heaven and earth pass away, these words shall not pass away, but shall be fulfilled. Within one section here, two sections, and you got complete contradiction. I can change my mind, I can revoke things, but my word's never going to pass away. And poor Ezra, I'm taking back what I told you the day before, but you still have to do it. And this is their type of thing. And this is in their book. Yeah, this is straight out of Doctrines and Covenants. I got the older version because I wanted you to see how it was originally written. But this is the type of thing that they have. Take a look then in Malachi chapter 3 and compare it to what God says concerning His Word. Malachi chapter 3. And in verse 6, for I, the Lord, do not change. Therefore you, O sons of Jacob, are not consumed. See, Jacob has been misbehaving. God's angry with him. But see, God had made some firm promises. And God's saying, I don't change. I'm going to keep them. That's the only reason why you people are still around, because I need you to fulfill my word. Compared to what he says here, I revoke commandments because he basically says, hey, I do what seems good to me because you guys are not behaving, so therefore I'm going to take my word back. That's not the same. Take a look at Psalm 119. Psalm 119 and verse 160. The sum of thy words is truth, and every one of thy righteous ordinance is everlasting. When God makes a command, it lasts how long? It lasts forever. God's not fickle. But what Mormonism teaches is that God is fickle. And we barely started scratching the surface here. And I got a whole bunch more. I got three of my 20 foils done so far. There are a lot of things that we need to understand about this religion. Because these are things that a lot of them don't, but they may be aware that they're there, but they don't realize the significance of it. We ought to point it out. Why are you asking me to believe in a God who's fickle, when the Bible teaches that God isn't? See, God gave His Word. In fact, in that passage that we had read to us in Jude, we'll start with Jude 3. We're going to talk about the other parts of it later, but Jude 3. Said, beloved, while I was making every effort to write to you about our common salvation, I felt the necessity to write to you appealing that you contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. Mormonism basically teaches that this is not true. There were other things that needed to be said, other things that needed to be delivered. Yet what they teach and what they practice, as we're going to see tonight, doesn't match with what the Bible teaches. And their practice and their lives don't match what the Bible says is necessary for goodness and righteousness. And yet people are trying to encourage other people to follow after this religion. Rather, what we ought to do is follow after what God has taught. The Bible has proven itself over and over and over again that it is accurate. The weight of evidence is great on its side. And therein we can put our trust in what he teaches.